Good morning. It's Monday, March 3rd. I'm Shamita Basu. This is Apple News Today. On today's show, how government funding helped build Elon Musk's business empire, the big winners from Hollywood's Biggest Night, and the figure skating community pays tribute to victims of January's mid-air collision. But first, after a disastrous meeting on Friday between President Trump, Vice President Vance, and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, European allies rushed to support Ukraine. And by Sunday, the UK announced plans to give Ukraine access to nearly $2 billion to bolster its defenses as a first step toward a peace agreement that the UK plans to present, along with France, to Trump. Here's UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer.
Today, I'm announcing a new deal, which allows Ukraine to use £1.6 billion of UK export finance to buy more than 5,000 air defense missiles.
Starmer also offered a nearly $3 billion loan for Ukraine that would be paid back using profits from sanctioned Russian assets. And he promised Ukraine that European nations would keep aid flowing and keep economic pressure on Russia. He said a, quote, coalition of the willing would commit to defend Ukraine, though he didn't say which nations would be involved. He did say, however, that Ukraine's participation in peace talks would be non-negotiable.
We agreed that any lasting peace must ensure Ukraine's sovereignty and security, and Ukraine must be at the table.
French President Emmanuel Macron told the newspaper Le Figaro that the peace proposal will include a one-month ceasefire by air, sea, and for energy infrastructure. But he said for now, no European troops will be deployed. And Starmer told the BBC that Trump has agreed to discuss the proposal. All of this comes after an explosive meeting at the Oval Office on Friday, where Trump and Vance reprimanded Zelensky, at times shouting,
"You're not winning. You're not winning this. You have a damn good chance of coming out okay because of us.
Mr. President, we are staying in our country, staying strong from the very beginning of the war. We've been alone, and we are thankful. I said thanks
in
this cabinet,
and
not only in this cabinet.
We gave you, through this stupid president, $350 billion.
You voted for your
president. We gave
you
military equipment, and your men are brave, but they had to use our military."
The White House asked Zelensky to leave after the meeting, and the leaders did not end up signing a mineral extraction deal. Zelensky has said, despite the blow-up, he is still willing to sign that deal. But Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent, who was heavily involved in negotiations, told CBS the agreement is no longer on the table. Some in Washington are supporting Trump and Vance in the way they handled the exchange, like Secretary of State Marco Rubio, who was in the Oval Office during the meeting and spoke with ABC News on Sunday.
"Shouldn't we all be happy that we have a president who's trying to stop wars and prevent them instead of start them? And I just don't get it. I really don't, other than the fact that it's Donald J. Trump. If this was a Democrat that was doing this, everyone would be saying, well, he's on his way to the Nobel Peace Prize."
But some other Republicans have criticized the president, like Senator Lisa Murkowski, who posted on social media, quote, "The administration appears to be walking away from our allies and embracing Putin, a threat to democracy and U.S. values around the world." And Democrats have widely denounced Trump and Vance's conduct. Speaking to CBS yesterday, Senator Mark Kelly called them bullies.
"I think Donald Trump was trying to look tough. J.D. Vance was trying to look tough. The only winner in that exchange is Putin, who's a criminal. So it was a sad day for our country. It was a dumpster fire of diplomacy."
Prior to Friday's meeting, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth ordered the Pentagon to pause offensive cyber operations against Russia, but didn't offer further explanation as to why. The Washington Post reports a Russian official on Sunday said the Oval Office blowup was seen as a gift to the Kremlin, and that the Trump administration's foreign policy now aligns with Russia. Tomorrow night, President Trump is scheduled to make his first address of this administration to a joint session of Congress, where he's expected to outline some of his plans for the year ahead, which could give the American people more insight into where he sees the relationship with Ukraine going. Senator Alyssa Slotkin will deliver the Democratic Party's official response. She's a first-term senator from Michigan, a state that split the ticket in sending her to the Senate and Trump to the White House. Now to a recent investigation from the Washington Post on Elon Musk's business empire and the government funding that helped build it. The Post combed through government data to track how much state and federal government money Musk's companies received over the last two decades. Investigative reporter Desmond Butler told us what they found.
There were $38 billion in contracts, loans, subsidies, and tax credits.
Nearly two-thirds of that money was promised to Musk's companies over the last 5 years.
And there is an additional $11.8 billion to come.
That money will come from 52 contracts Musk has already signed with seven different government agencies, including NASA, the Defense Department, and the General Services Administration. All of this money propelled Musk to becoming the world's richest person. And the Post found this government funding helped Musk's companies survive their early years, particularly Tesla and SpaceX.
There was a moment in 2008 when Tesla was really not in a good position, and they sought a loan from the Energy Department for $465 million. And Musk himself really played a big part in getting that loan, in contacting government officials. And we had former high-ranking employees at Tesla saying that the company probably wouldn't have made it without that loan.
With SpaceX, both NASA and the Defense Department also granted contracts that helped the company build its infrastructure. And they were aware of SpaceX's failure to meet required milestones, according to congressional investigators. These days, however, Musk has called to end some of the very benefits that helped his companies flourish.
During the campaign, he called for the end of subsidies across all industries. Well, there's a lot of irony in that, because had somebody else done that 20 years ago, we wouldn't have probably Tesla or SpaceX.
Musk has also called to end a consumer credit for electric vehicles that experts say helped boost sales for Tesla. His Department of Government Efficiency, meanwhile, is trying to cut staffing, budgets, and contracts at every single agency Musk has ongoing contracts with.
As we watch a lot of the very exuberant cost cutting, we really wanted to point out that Elon Musk is somebody who really benefited from that partnership.
The government has clearly benefited from these partnerships, too, Butler points out. But if Musk continues to pursue large-scale cuts, that could hurt other companies trying to follow in his footsteps.
And you could see it as kind of closing the door after you walk through it. If we want to foster other successful companies, maybe the success of these companies should be an example.
Now to the Oscars. The biggest winner last night was Anora, a film about a sex worker who impulsively marries the son of a Russian oligarch. It was awarded five Oscars, including the Marquee Prize of the Evening Best Picture. Director Sean Baker accepted the award.
One last thing. I want to thank the Academy for recognizing a truly independent film. This film was made on the blood, sweat, and tears of incredible indie artists. And long live independent film. Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
The dramedy had only a $6 million budget, and Baker told NPR it was a major feat to get that funding because the cast was made up of mostly, in his words, quote, unknown Russians and Armenians, plus American actress Mikey Madison. When Baker was shopping the project around, potential funders asked him to find more recognizable names, but Baker told NPR he chose to stick to his guns. He took home the Oscar for Best Director, Best Original Screenplay, and Best Editing, becoming the first person ever to win four Oscars in one night for a single movie. But perhaps the biggest shock of the night was Madison, who's 25 years old, winning Best Actress for her role in the film.
I grew up in Los Angeles, but Hollywood always felt so far away from me. So to be here, standing in this room today is really incredible.
Madison, who is one of the youngest actresses to win the prize, beat out favorite Demi Moore, whose performance in The Substance was widely celebrated in the run-up to the Oscars. One of the other big winners was No Other Land, which took home the prize for Best Documentary. The film was directed by a collective of Palestinian and Israeli activists, and it documents Israel's demolition of Palestinian homes in the occupied West Bank to make room for a tank training ground. While accepting the award, directors Basil Adra, a Palestinian activist, and Yuval Abraham, an Israeli journalist, directly addressed Israel's war in Gaza.
We call on the world to take serious actions to stop the injustice and to stop the ethnic cleansing of Palestinian people.
We made this film, Palestinians and Israelis, because together our voices are stronger. We see each other. The atrocious destruction of Gaza and its people, which must end, the Israeli hostages brutally taken in the crime of October 7th, which must be freed.
No Other Land was the highest-grossing Oscar-nominated documentary of the year. But if our American listeners are not more familiar with it, that's because it was never distributed in the United States. The filmmakers only managed to self-distribute to just a few theaters. It was a darling of the international film festival circuit, but Abraham told Variety, because the film is very critical of Israeli policies, it struggled to get pickup in the U.S., where he says there is, quote, less space for this kind of criticism. His and Adra's speech was arguably the most political moment of the night, where the policies of the Trump administration and politics in general were largely left out of the conversation. The night's other big acting prizes went to Zoe Saldana for her performance in Emilia Perez. The Netflix film was nominated for 13 awards, the most of any other movie, but only took home two. Kieran Culkin won for his supporting role in A Real Pain, and Adrian Brody took home Best Actor for The Brutalist. Before we let you go, a few other stories we're following. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu halted all humanitarian aid going into Gaza on Sunday as phase one of the ceasefire deal between Israel and Hamas came to an end. Negotiations for phase two of the deal, aimed at ending the war and negotiating the release of all the remaining surviving hostages in Gaza, had just started. The White House, in a statement, said they support Israel's decision and said Hamas was no longer interested in a negotiated ceasefire. Hamas said it's ready to continue ceasefire negotiations and called Israel's blocking of aid, quote, a war crime and a blatant coup against the agreement. Meanwhile, on Sunday, Secretary of State Marco Rubio used emergency authorities to send $4 billion in weapons to Israel. The New York Times reports it's the second time in a month the administration bypassed rules requiring congressional approval to send arms to Israel. Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. says the measles outbreak in Texas is a call to action and that the MMR vaccine is crucial. Writing in an opinion piece for Fox News, Kennedy acknowledged that many of Texas's current cases are affecting kids who were not vaccinated against measles, mumps, and rubella. And he said while these vaccines are a personal choice, they can protect not only individual children from measles, but also contribute to widespread immunity. And just over a month after the fatal collision between an Army helicopter and American Airlines plane over the Potomac River, members of the figure skating community remembered those who were lost on that flight with a tribute show in Washington, D.C. Among the people who died that day were 11 young figure skaters, four coaches, and 13 of their family members who were returning from a training camp in Kansas. The tribute show featured some of the most legendary names in the sport and was co-hosted by Olympic champions Brian Boitano and Christy Yamaguchi.
While it is important to mourn the lost lives, it's also important to celebrate them.
And we'll celebrate through the language that we know best, skating.
In all, more than 40 current and retired Team USA skaters participated, each starting their routine by placing a white rose on a rinkside table. The sold-out show also raised funds to support the victims' families, first responders, and U.S. figure skating. NBC's local station reports another big theme of the night was aviation safety reform, with a message up on the Jumbotron asking Congress to pass bipartisan safety legislation to prevent future tragedies. You can find all these stories and more in the Apple News app. And if you're already listening in the News app right now, we've got a narrated article coming up next. New York Magazine has a story on the mystery of a famous footless goose from the 80s. He became a celebrity of sorts when he was given new feet in the form of a pair of baby sneakers filled with rubber padding. He even appeared in People Magazine and on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. But he was brutally murdered, and one reporter tries to figure out what happened. If you're listening in the podcast app, follow Apple News Plus Narrated to find that story. And I'll be back with the news tomorrow.